Okay, so I'm here with Bruce today, and we are talking about Iran's relationship with Afghanistan. So Bruce has written a monograph called Iran's Policy on Afghanistan: The Evolution of Strategic Pragmatism. So, Iran's involvement in Afghanistan is something that isn't really discussed here in the United States, which I find sort of odd, because Iran is, you go back through the historical record and especially in this paper, it becomes obvious that Iran has been involved in Afghanistan since the Soviet period, since the Mujahideen period, and it seems odd that in the West, that there is, in the United States at least, there's no real conversation about this. So we invited Bruce today to sort of help us puzzle through Iran's involvement in Afghanistan and sort of try to figure out where do we put Iran. Iran's political position and strategy within, more well-known positions like Pakistan or China. So let's start off with Bruce. Give us a history of Iran's involvement in Afghanistan, particularly at, it's sort of fascinating that, in the paper you mentioned that 1979 and 1978 were huge dates because you had not only the communist government come to power in Kabul, but you also had the Islamic Revolution happen in that sort of 1 year, 2 year span. So, I mean, walk us through that initial history between Iran and Afghanistan.
Okay, thanks, Sina. Perhaps before I start with the period of 1978 and 1979, I mean, it's important to understand that Iran and Afghanistan have had a long tradition, a long history that goes back for centuries. Many Afghans have been visiting Iran, especially the Shias in Afghanistan for pilgrimage, so sort of religious tourism, and also many Afghans have sought employment. So even prior to these very significant events, that there was a lot of engagement. But come 1979, with the Islamic Revolution, Iran was very much preoccupied with domestic affairs. The uprising in Afghanistan started already in 1978, and then the Islamic Revolution in Iran in 79 had an impact on the certainly had an impact on the Shias in Afghanistan, who looked at Iran as a model. And it's perhaps no surprise that some of the first resistance fighters in Afghanistan, in the Central Highlands region of Afghanistan, that they started rebelling against the communist government. As the conflict deteriorated, and we saw the emergence of a civil war, many Afghans sought refuge in Iran, and some of these groups started to turn into military, political factions and returned to Afghanistan to fight against the communist government.
Interesting. So, I mean, at this initial period, I mean, was Iran able to sort of export the revolution to Afghanistan? I mean, as we saw, Iran was, at that, at least in that initial period, that initial, decade, was very much about exporting the revolution, very much about exporting sort of its ideas to, whomever. Would you consider during this initial period, was it successful in sort of exporting and organizing, based around its ideology in Afghanistan?
Well, in the early days, after the Islamic Revolution, the ideology was very much based on Khomeini's, Ayatollah Khomeini's ideology to take the revolution further to other countries. But since the focus was on domestic affairs, the Iranian government at that time favored those groups that were either Shia or had connections with the various Shia groups. There are a number of Shias living in Afghanistan, the largest group being the Hazaras, but there are also Saeeds and Tajiks and Pashtuns. But the first group mentioned before in the Central Highlands, that were primarily Hazaras, and some of the leaders had studied, some of the religious leaders in Afghanistan had studied in Iran and had thereby been influenced by some of the ideology presented by Ayatollah Khomeini.
So, in this initial period, how would Iran sort of structure its its involvement? I mean, was it really focused on sort of, you know, fighting the Soviet, you know, the communist government in Kabul, excuse me, or was it really focused on, not only exporting its revolution, but sort of focusing on, you know, what would become the north of Afghanistan, Herat, and sort of, you know, the area where you would expect, co-linguists, Farsi, Dari, and, you know, where the Shiites are. I mean, sort of walk us through, I mean, how would Iran sort of recruit Afghans into its ideology?
Well, traditionally, the Shias in Afghanistan were a repressed and marginalized group. So in these early days, the Iranian government was concerned about providing adequate support to the Shias in Afghanistan so that they would eventually become politically represented. They were not so much involved in changing the government in Afghanistan, as the focus was clearly on domestic affairs in Iran, ensuring adequate security, and then later on they'd have to deal with the Iraq war, which started shortly thereafter. So Iran was very much preoccupied and provided limited funding to and support to some of these Shia Mujahideen groups, but not at a large scale, but certainly supported them and helped them to get started. The emphasis was on Khomeini's ideology, and the Afghan Shias who were prepared to adopt this ideology were favored.
So within these favored groups, I mean, how would you describe these favored groups from the perspective of language and ethnicity? Is it the sort of groups that would speak Farsi or Dari, and then, you know, there would also be Shiite, so Tajik, or was there really, the preference was really for this recruitment was based on, you know, ideology, religion, and then whether or not that particular group or that particular organization would tie itself to Khomeini?
Excuse me. From the beginning, the emphasis and the preference was on the co-religionists, the Shias, who tend to speak Farsi-related languages, either Dari or for the Hazaras, Hazaraji. This later shifted as the conflict ensued, the support, and we can discuss that in more detail, to other non-Pashtun groups. But in the early period from 79 till close to the late 80s, early 90s. The emphasis was clearly on Shia non-Pashtun groups in Afghanistan. This then changed following some significant events in 19. Well, this leads then to a big jump. So there were several Shia Mujahideen groups. There were nine of them. Most of them had originated among the refugees in Iran, and as we now understand, in Afghanistan there were many internal conflicts, and some of these groups were had tensions among themselves. So later on, Iran insisted in bringing these groups together to form one main Shia group by the name of Hezb-e Wahdat, to make them a stronger and more cohesive group. Also, in order to compete with the other Mujahideen groups in Afghanistan, which were primarily Sunni.
So, you know, when the Soviet supported government collapses in 1991, 1992, I think I have my dates right. I hope so. And you had the sort of ascension of the Mujahideen government led by, I think off the top of my head, Rabbani. You know, how does Iran's position sort of shift? I mean, they went from what seemed like from 1979 to 1991, you know, resistance and sort of, you know, not only being focused on domestic affairs, but sort of, you know, being able to foster these groups in Afghanistan, to a position where, you know, there's no more communist government in Kabul. Now you have Mujahideen in charge. So sort of describe, you know, Iran's shift, you know, from the earlier period to now, you know, 1992 to 2001, I guess.
So in order for the Shias in Afghanistan to act effectively, they joined as one group called the Hezb-e Wahdat in 1989. This was also at a time when the interim government, the interim Mujahideen government of Afghanistan was put together under the dominance of the Sunni Pashtun groups, and Iran felt that the Shia, who were actually one of the first groups to have emerged, were left out and were not included in this interim government. And this probably also helped their position, that there was a need to have one strong, united Shia faction in Afghanistan. When the communist government of Najibullah fell, so there was an interregnum period from 1989 till 1992, where Najibullah was still holding on power in Kabul. When the then Soviet government stopped funding Najibullah in 92, his government very quickly collapsed, and the transitional government of Afghanistan, I think it was called the Islamic State of Afghanistan, was formed, but it didn't have any Shia representation. So the Iranian government lobbied that there needed to be the inclusion of Hezb-e Wahdat as well, and they did manage to lobby, and they were successful in the end.
How did sort of Iran sort of grapple with the political chaos from the collapse of the Najibullah government to sort of the rise of the Mujahideen government, I guess, or the Islamic government of Afghanistan to sort of, it seems like this period is also defined by not only the inability of sort of Afghanistan to govern itself, but also at the same time, the rise of the Taliban in 1994, 1993. So, I mean, what was sort of Iran's reaction politically to this chaos that's happening, you know, pardon the phrase, you know, right next door, and sort of, with sort of Shia parties forming a, what I'm assuming to be a minority and sort of, a very small part of the political order in Afghanistan at that time.
Iran supported the establishment of an Islamic state and supported a Islamist Mujahideen government, especially once the Shia were included. So this first post-communist government was led by Zebahtullah Mujahedidi, initially for three months period, and then that was supposed to be on a rotating basis, and then followed by Burhanuddin Rabbani, who is a Sunni Tajik. Early on in this post-communist period, it was quite clear that there were divisions among the former Mujahideen groups, and within months there were armed clashes between these various groups, where formerly they were all allied together fighting against the communist government, but now they started to fight each other, and some of the former allies, including Jamiat, for example, they were fighting Hezbi Wadad strongholds in Kabul, some Sunni Islamist groups under the leadership of Ustad Sayaf. They were also in conflict, an armed conflict with Hezbi Wadad. This internecine fighting led from late 1994 onwards to the creation of the Taliban, since the there was no law and order at that time. The armed conflict, the war had continued. So all of a sudden, a new radical Pashtun group emerged in the south, starting in 1994, gradually moving northwards and capturing Kabul in 1996. So prior to the Taliban rule of Afghanistan, there was a brief period where the leader of the Shia, Hezbi Wadad, was entertaining discussions with the Taliban, trying to explore whether they could establish an alliance. And when the Taliban were moving into Kabul in 1995, and they had agreed that they could pass through Shia areas, they were actually attacked by one faction of Hezbi Wadad, and the Taliban felt betrayed, and they immediately captured the leader of Hezbi Wadad, Ali Mazari, who was trained in Iran, and they executed him. So this immediately led to a change in Iran's policy when they perceived that the Taliban were actually a threat to the Shia in Afghanistan. And then a few years later, when the Taliban had captured North Afghanistan in 1998, they took up the control of the consulate in Mazar-e-Sharif in Balkh province in North Afghanistan, and killed 9 Iranian diplomats and 2 journalists. So this clearly was a change in Iran's policy on Afghanistan, when they realized that the Taliban were a threat against Iran's national security.
And it's at that point in 1998, after the Manzar Sharif massacre killings, or, you know, it seems like Iran also moved forces to the eastern border. I mean, I think in not only paper, but also in Ahmed Rashid's Taliban, you document the fact that, you know, after that massacre or around that massacre, that Iran started to amass troops on the border of Iran and Afghanistan. But they never really went into Afghanistan. So, I mean, from that perspective and during this period, I mean, how did Iran sort of conceptualize dealing with the Taliban up until 9/11 or 2001? I mean, did Iran sort of think that the Taliban could sort of be won over by diplomacy, by isolation, or just by, you know, violence?
And already from 1989 onwards, I mean, we already clearly saw a shift that the Iranian government also supported other Persian, Farsi-speaking and non-Pashtun groups who primarily live in North Afghanistan and in Western Afghanistan, the Tajik, Uzbek minority groups living in the north. So there was already a shift from the Hazara to the members of what is now mostly known as the Northern Alliance. In 1998, following the incident in Mazar-e-Sharif, it seems that there were strong divisions in the Iranian government, with the military wanting to retaliate, and as you correctly said, they amassed a large number of troops at Iran's eastern border. But it seems that President Khatami's policies at the time prevailed, and that the Iranian army did not enter Afghanistan, but it sent a very strong signal to the Taliban, and from then onwards, the Iranian government supported the Northern Alliance, the non-Taliban alliance of primarily non-Pashtun former Mujahideen against the Taliban, and that lasted until the end of 2001, with the overthrow of the Taliban regime following the US-led military intervention that followed the September 11 attacks.
So you touch on something interesting. I mean, going from 2001 on, you have the presence of the United States in Afghanistan. And, you know, with the fall of the Taliban and sort of the U.S. involvement in Afghanistan, you know, how did Iran sort of change its approach to Afghanistan? I mean, now that, you know, the Taliban had been, at least from the period of 2002 to 2007, the Taliban were on the run, but sort of politically marginalized for the moment. You know, how did Iran sort of change its approach? You know, now that you've gotten rid of the Taliban, but now the United States is, you know, in a country on Iran's eastern border.
I mean, from 1979 onwards, Iran really wanted peace in Afghanistan, and it favored a political solution. They did not see that peace could prevail with the Taliban in power, and they already pre-2001 they were supporting peace initiatives under the United Nations, and some also that they had organized unilaterally by bringing in the various leaders into Iran to find a solution, find a political solution to the military conflict. As Taliban, as the Taliban regime was clearly a threat to Iran, having killed diplomats and having had anti-Shia sentiments clearly expressed by the Taliban leadership, and with Shias being attacked and massacred in various parts of Afghanistan during Taliban rule and during their march northwards into the central highlands, it actually supported the US in its military intervention and helped considerably to defeat the Taliban. The US didn't have any involvement, any connections, any intelligence with the Afghan leaders. It was the Iranians who were the Iranian government that was in contact with the leaders of the Northern Alliance. And it seems now that Iran provided intelligence to the US and allied forces that entered Afghanistan in October 2001.
So how would you describe, now that in 2002 to 2007, you have the Taliban is gone, how would you describe Iran's sort of political and sort of economic strategy towards Afghanistan? I think in your paper you make mention that from this period that Iran had been sort of investing heavily in Afghanistan. I forget the specific number, but it was something like $500 million to $1 billion. It's just a very large sort of sum of money. But, how would you describe, Iran's political and sort of economic stance towards Afghanistan within that period of, within that initial period, 2002 to 2007?
The Iranian government understood that the new Afghan government, the transitional government of Hamid Karzai, and then later the elected government of President Karzai, needed financial support, that the political and economic reconstruction was essential to ensure enduring peace and security in Afghanistan. It was one of the major donors following a donor conference in Tokyo in 2002, where they donated $560 million for the reconstruction of Afghanistan. This was during the presidency of Mohammad Khatami. Iran very much understood that Afghanistan needed to be stabilized, and this could only happen if there was economic development, and also if the various ethnic groups could form a broad-based government and rule Afghanistan. So they've had the experience. They understood that not one single ethnic group could rule Afghanistan, but that needed to be a shared responsibility. Traditionally, Iran has had strong trade relations with Afghanistan's western province of Herat, and also of some of the other border provinces, which is quite common. And with Afghanistan's eastern provinces, there are strong trade relations with Pakistan. So naturally, they continued to provide assistance in these areas, but also in other areas of Afghanistan, in the north, as well as in Kabul. Because of Iran's support, Herat had electricity, also some of the first major infrastructure projects were funded by the Iranian government. The Herat Islam Qala highway is one of the main borders into Iran. They built the road, they built various custom buildings and border police buildings, and in further south, in the southwestern province of Nimruz, they built a bridge, the Silk Bridge. So there were many projects on Afghanistan's western border, as well as in some other areas that traditionally were inhabited by groups that were close to the Northern Alliance, but they've been also funding projects in Kabul.
So I'm sort of curious, I mean, how much of this is, you know, you document sort of reconstruction projects in a very much, you know, bridge or building, but I mean, how much of this was also sort of proselytization, sort of, you know, building mosques and sort of bringing Iran's sort of interpretation of Shiism to places like Herat, to Kabul, to, you know, wherever else in the country. I mean, did Iran see this opportunity with the fall of the Taliban as sort of an opportunity to promote its ideology within Afghanistan?
Well, I forgot to mention before that throughout this conflict, Iran very generously hosted many million Afghan refugees. I mean, at some point, over 3.5 million Afghan refugees were living in Iran, and today there are still 1 million refugees and over 1 million undocumented Afghans living in Iran. In order for the Afghans to be able to return, to repatriate to Afghanistan, certain conditions need to be met. So the Iranian government understood that by supporting the reconstruction and building clinics and schools and infrastructure project, this would make it easier for the Afghans to return to Afghanistan and help rebuild the Afghan economy.
So, I mean, when we transition from 2007 on, so 2007 to now, 2013, you know, how has Iran been adjusting with sort of, I don't want to say, you know, with the United States sort of, you know, fumbling in Afghanistan, with, you know, the war sort of not going as well for the United States, and sort of, you know, I think the period from 2007 to 2013 is also characterized as sort of the rise of the Taliban again, the neo-Taliban, as sort of some scholars have deemed it. But, you know, how has Iran sort of adjusted to that period of sort of the Taliban being resurgent and violence being resurgent in Afghanistan?
Initially, Iran thought that the U.S. military intervention would be brief. So they supported it, they helped, and they thought that the U.S. and its allies, they would leave soon after and allow the Afghans to get on with the reconstruction and conducting its own affairs. When after 2003, the mandate of the International Security Assistance Forces was expanded to other outside of Kabul and to other parts of Afghanistan, and with the establishment of provincial rehabilitation teams, more or less military bases in many of the provinces in Afghanistan, Iran started to realize that they, all of a sudden, they had foreign troops close to its border and having U.S. troops close to the Iranian border, and they wanted to see a timetable of the withdrawal. They were worried that the international military could stay indefinitely. So they started raising this matter, and wanted to have clear answers and wanted to know an exact date of the departure. With the current transition process that is in place and that will come to an end by the end of 2014, in theory, Iran's concerns about an ongoing foreign presence in Afghanistan will be cleared. But the American government and the Afghan government have not finalized its security agreement, the bilateral security agreement. And until it is known how many foreign troops will remain or will, whether there will be any troops at all, Iran will raise concerns about the foreign presence. So they are still awaiting clear instructions. According to the transition plan, all foreign troops supposed to leave by the end of 2014. In the current bilateral security agreement discussions, there is talk of an ongoing international training mission. And there are still some ambiguities that need to be sorted out and certainly will help to ease the concerns, the legitimate concerns of the Iranian government.
So I want to sort of switch gears a little and move away from history into sort of the themes of Iran's involvement in Afghanistan. Particularly, I mean, in your research, I mean, could you... Was there an Iranian strategy to Afghanistan? Was there sort of certain set of behaviors that were consistent across, you know, the four periods that we've discussed?
It seems if one looks at these last 3.5 decades, it's very clear that Iran wants to have a neighbor that is at peace and in control and in charge of its own political affairs. And it has supported that throughout these periods. Also, Iran wants to have trade relations with its eastern neighbor, and it also sees Iran as a gateway to South Asia and as a gateway to Central Asia. So it supports the development of the trade routes, the expansion of highways and railways. Actually, it has been working on the construction of a railway from Khaf in Khorasan province that will extend all the way into Herat province. And there is now talk and there are plans to build a connecting highway from Herat to Mazar-e-Sharif. And in Mazar-e-Sharif, there is already a railway that links into Uzbekistan. And there are also plans that this may extend further east from Mazar-e-Sharif into Tajikistan. So Iran clearly understands that Afghanistan can play a very important role for the entire region in transporting goods, natural resources, energy, and that this would help stabilize not only Afghanistan, but the entire region. It has already in 2002, it started building a port in Chabahar province in Iran's southeast, which is the shortest, which provides the shortest land link from a port from the Persian Gulf to Afghanistan. There is already existing large port in Bandar Abbas. So the Iranian government clearly understands that there are huge potentials to further build on these trade routes.
So, I mean, you know, I think one consequence of the invasion of Afghanistan has been sort of not only the refugees, but also the problem of drugs and narcotics. So how has sort of Iran been dealing with the narcotics trade? Because it seems like reading through, I think it was Gretchen Peters' Seeds of Terror, where she sort of documents the drug trade in Afghanistan. And, you know, notable in her writing was that, you know, it's Pakistan that processes opium to heroin, and it's heroin that goes to Iran that is then used in Iran. So she was sort of getting at the problem of drug addiction in Iran. So, I mean, how has Iran sort of approached that issue of narcotics trafficking? I mean, is it something that Iran sees it as related to Afghanistan and sort of the conflict in Afghanistan?
Iran has very much been affected by Afghanistan's drug trade, and it's really at the front line with the majority of drugs being trafficked through Iran and then onwards to Europe. They have taken this matter very seriously. You've correctly pointed out that there is there are domestic concerns. There are at least 1.5 million drug addicts in Iran, and the availability of cheap drugs, cheap opium flooding Iran is a huge concern to the authorities. And hence they have strengthened the law enforcement officers along the border, which have taken on these drug cartels who are very much equipped like many of the insurgent groups. And as a result, Iran has lost more than 3,500 law enforcement officers over the last three decades. At the same time, they have intercepted the largest number of opiates worldwide. So this is often not recognized, but they are really taking this matter seriously and are at the forefront in dealing with this matter. They have established a cooperation with other countries in the region. They have a trilateral initiative with Pakistan, since the drugs enter the western parts via Pakistan and Iran. This is Iran also understands that they cannot address this issue alone, and that the Afghan counter-narcotic forces need to be strengthened, and that there need to be joint efforts to address this issue. With the drawdown of foreign troops and the first indications from UNODC, the UN agency on drug control, is that there's very with the increase in unemployment and the decrease in international donor funds, that the drug cultivation is likely to increase in the first years after the transitions post 2014. So these are very big concerns indeed.
Interesting. So I'm sort of, you know, I think we've sort of reached the end of the interview, and so we've covered a lot today, but we always like to give the guest the last word and sort of the last comment to leave the audience with, you know, thinking about and sort of, you know, how to sort of conceptualize Iran and Iran's relationship with Afghanistan.
Well, this year we have seen the election of President Rouhani in June, and he was inaugurated in August. And many of his senior members and ministers in his team are very familiar with the Afghan conflict. And it provides an opportunity for other countries to appreciate Iran's knowledge and engagement in Afghanistan and to possibly work with Iran to seek a lasting solution. Iran required the assistance of the US to defeat the Taliban, which was a threat to the Iranian government. But now in 2000 and at the end of 2013, Iran is in a much more comfortable position. What needs to happen is to find a lasting mechanism that provides security in Afghanistan, and the Afghan National Security Forces will continue to require training, but at the same time, Afghanistan will require the support of friendly countries to defeat insurgents. In terms of US-Iran engagement, Afghanistan may actually be a key area where these two countries can work together to stabilize Afghanistan, which in turn will help to stabilize the entire region. So it's a very special moment that may have a lasting impact.
Well, thank you so much for coming on.
You're welcome.